Hello, it's your friend. It is NBA Soups, and I bring you once again our podcast for Hawks Talk. And obviously, the point of topic today, after the last podcast, is going to be about prospects. The prospects we're going to cover are prospects I consider very valuable in terms of our long-term potential. This draft is not quite as good as last year's draft. I think that the expectation is that some people are like, this draft is bad. In my opinion, this draft is not bad. I think this draft is quite good. I just don't think this draft has a likely superstar. There could be a superstar in this draft. I mean, multiple. But, you know, how likely is it? It's just situation. Everything matters. You know, it's just like if you go back and you go to certain drafts and you're like, okay, did you see a star coming from the draft? You'd be like, no. And then 5 years later, there's a star that's from that draft. I don't necessarily know if this draft has a likely superstar. But this draft does have things that I like, and I'm fairly high on it. I mean, you don't have that. It's not as good as 2019, and it definitely isn't as good as 2018. But I think you're going to like this draft. So first, I'm going to cover my top five guys. Obviously, I have created a large database of guys that I like overall. And even if I don't like, I kind of have them in the database and whatnot. But I'll just cover the top five, my top five guys in general. And we're going to start. First is Anthony Edwards, who's tied for number one with LaMelo Ball and Obi Toppin. What I like about Anthony Edwards is I like his exceptionally high talent level. I like his athleticism. I think he's a top 1% athlete, a top 99% percentile athlete. His size is tremendous for a two guard at 6'5", 225. He even looked like he grew an inch since the last time he played. And, of course, that's normal. I mean, they're at an age where they're continuing to grow. He's very, very strong. I mean, he played football. He was a prep star in Atlanta. He comes from a family where I think his mother died when he was growing up, and his father, I don't know if his father passed away, or I don't have enough information on his father, but I do know that his siblings took care of him and they raised him, and as well as his grandmother. And so he's very family oriented. He's a funny kid. He's very good personality. He's going to get along in the locker room. From everyone I've spoken with on the situation, thinks highly of the kid in terms of how people like him and how people, you know, they, when they see him, they smile. He's one of those guys that just, he lightens up the locker room. And that's very important because Atlanta doesn't have enough of those guys. Atlanta has too many guys who don't really have great personalities in terms of like that type of personality. I mean, you got guys quiet like Cam and DeAndre, and you know, and Trey has a personality, but Trey kind of is to himself somewhat. But to have a personality like Anthony, who just everybody just loves to be around, he's always about changing stuff, and he's a showman. You know, he's gonna get it, and so I like his personality. I personally liken him to John Wall. I mean, not that they play alike, they don't play alike. But, I mean, 99 percentile athlete, physical strength, really good. Great height for position, great size for position. Exceptional talent level, very skillful players. I mean, obviously, John's more of a slasher. And while Edwards is like modern style, hardened, Oladipo type player. Obviously, because of that, his percentages look pretty bad. I mean, I think he's under 54% in terms of field goal percentage, which isn't good at all. I mean, there hasn't been a guy who's been under 54% that's been an all-star in this league. But that's just the way that you got to remember, the three-point line is further back now in college, and the modern college basketball is just different. The percentages aren't going to be as high for guards because of the way the game is being played today. So you have to take into account that. So I think that you really have to think about these things when you're talking about a guy like Anthony Edwards. But that being said, skill-based, is crazy. His lateral quickness, he can stick with people as far as man defense. He even has some off-ball defensive potential. But, I mean, overall, he's a terrible defender. I mean, he's an absolutely horrendous defender. He's not going to help you day one. He's going to be terrible. Offensively, day one, he's not going to really help you that much either. I mean, he's pretty much a 7 on that end of the floor, which is decent. I mean, that's pretty much what you would get from a you pretty much get that like from your role playing starter, a 7. That's pretty much like a role playing starter type of offensive level player, which you expect from them. And so he gives you that, but he gives you that at like 18, 19. I mean, so that pretty much means when he gets into your team at 19 years old, and after a couple months of training and learning how things are, you know, he can be like an 8 or 9 on offense, like, because he just has that level of potential. And so what you're buying in on him is just this overall talent. And to me, he's just it's very unlikely for him not to reach his potential, at least to get to a 9 on offense. Now, he might not get to a 10, but at least get to a 9, because he's just so talented, and this is just a talent-driven sport. And, you know, to have his level of talent just doesn't come around often. Defensively, he's listed as a 5 right now. Obviously, that means he's garbage. That means your average G-League player is a better defender right now than Anthony Edwards, which makes sense because your average college basketball player was better defender than Anthony Edwards. But, you know, the talent level is ridiculous with him. He obviously has defensive potential because of his talent level. And obviously, like all rookies, you're going to have to coach him up. I mean, most of these guys, one and dones, are bad at basketball. They need to be coached up. That's all. I mean, they're not rookies. They're rookies. But they're the truest sense of what modern day rookies look like. They need to be coached up a lot. And Anthony Edwards is not any different from that. So, you know, obviously, I'm not super high on his fit in Atlanta. But that being said, I am very high on his fit in terms of short term. Like, I think he's a 6th man for the next 3 to 4 years. And if he can get to that value of, you know, where he could be a 9 or 10 offensively, you're talking about, you know, obviously like all-star starting type talent, and then maybe MVP like offensive type talent, like where you're like, okay, this guy's like really nasty. And he, you know, James Harden kind of showed that 9 when he was in OKC. And if he's showing that in Atlanta off the bench, a 9, like, that's crazy. And, you know, that'll help you win a lot of games in the playoffs. Because, you know, if you come off the bench, you're bringing someone like that off the bench, that's unfair. And, you know, OKC won a lot of games because of that. OKC went to the NBA Finals because of that. So he's obviously, to me, a no-brainer choice. He's a local. He's a local kid from Atlanta. He's the best prospect on the board for Atlanta. Even if he's tied, I have him listed tied for 1A. I mean, he's just, you know, he's just that guy. But I like him a lot. I think the player he reminds me of the most is probably, it's tough. I'd probably say he reminds me a little bit of Victor Oladipo. I mean, he plays like James Harden, but he doesn't really use that strength he doesn't usually use his strength like James Harden. James Harden really knows how to use a game, and if Vic kind of plays that way where he doesn't always use his strength to his game, so he plays a lot like Vic. Doesn't have the off ball movement that Vic does. Like Vic, even though he's a good off ball slasher, he's not really a good off ball player. Like he doesn't, like, when the ball's not in his hand, he just stands there a lot of times. And, you know, I think that, unfortunately, I think that's going to be a habit for him. And I don't think he'll mesh well with Trae Young as a starter at all. But that being said, I don't really think you really have to worry about that. I think if you can just get 4 good years of 6th man out of him and maybe trade him for, like, a superstar that you really need, if you're a team like Atlanta, then you do it. I just think that, you know, at the end of the day, I feel like with him, you get him and Trae Young, you're going to be having to choose at the end of the contract which one you want to keep, him or Trae Young. And I think that if you go loyalty and be Trae Young, it might be the wrong decision because, you know, this guy might be that guy. But then if you choose Trae Young, if you trade Trae Young, you don't have the point guard, and then it turns out, you know, Hunter Edwards is not that guy, and it turns out that he's not necessarily the best fit with you know, Hunter and Reddish either, then you make a bad mistake. So you just have to, you know, I mean, it's at the end of the day, he's the best talent on the board, and Isaiah Tate the best talent on the board, you know. But next on the list, obviously, is it's pretty much a similar prospect, but that is LaMelo Ball. I mean, both are 7-5s, horrible defensive players who are, you know, who have unbelievable offensive talent, but they're not necessarily good at offense right now. Both have a lot of things to work on. I would say Hunter, I would say like Ball's kind of boom or bust. You know, being a 6 overall and then being drafted in top 3 is not necessarily a positive thing. You don't want to draft a 6 overall in the top 3. But I mean, we did it with Trae Young, and it worked out in our favor. I mean, yes, he was a 6 overall, and yes, second first half of the season he was like a 5.5, but second half of the season he was 8.5. So if you're a team like the New York Knicks and you're like, you don't have no one, and yet he might stink the first half of the season, you're going to be in the lottery. If he's an 8.5 in the second half of the season, like Trae Young was, all of a sudden now you're looking at things completely different. You're like, LaMelo Ball, we got a player. Because I think the issue when you look at New York this year is New York drafted RJ Barrett, who was a 7.5. I mean, a much, 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 much better player at this stage than LaMelo Ball. And you know, they drafted him into a situation that was kind of tough for him. And I mean, he didn't really fit that situation. And, you know, with LaMelo, obviously, you're going to have to build everything around him, like Atlanta had to do with Trae Young. But with RJ Barrett, you can't really build everything around him. He doesn't have enough playmaking ability. So, like, you know, he kind of went to a situation where he kind of dropped the point because it was like a 7.5 situation fit-wise. And he basically was like a 7 talent, like a seven. Instead of like an 8.5, which would 7.5, which he was, with a 9.5 like potential, and it really made him. I mean, with not potential, and it really made him look kind of bad because, you know, he just like all year he really hasn't performed. Like he's been pretty much around. Like he shows his talent. Like, he shows freakish talent sometimes, but he really has been pretty much close to a 6.57. And you never seen him make a jump like Trae Young made between the second half of the season. You never seen RJ Barrett make that jump. And so you worry, is that a good pick or a bad pick or whatnot? And, you know, you worry about those things. But in regards to LaMelo Ball, I think you just have to take him. You have to take that risk. Because, you know, lead point guards are everything. And then lead point guards who are tall are like everything. And if you can get a player like LaMelo, I mean, personally to me, I love LaMelo. I think he's special. I think he's very similar to Trae Young, to be honest with you. I actually kind of think they're very similar. I know a lot of people don't like the comparison because they think of the shooting, but I think they're similar. I don't think, LaMelo, if you took away some of those, like, I think it, like it was a left three-point shot that he took, he was like 2-for-32. If you took away that shot, he's like a 36% three-point shooter. Like, I think Cam and LaMelo, I think they're very similar. I think Trae Young and LaMelo Ball are very similar. I think LaMelo just has a little bit more potential. But I think they're very similar. I think just LaMelo's length and height just gives him a little bit more potential than Trae Young. But I thought they were very similar a couple years ago. In fact, when I saw him in high school, I thought that was his prototype was Trae Young. And I think they're very similar even now. And so, because they both use their handles to get open. They don't really use their quickness. I mean, or they're quick. They're quick for their size. They're just not quick. Like, they're not like De'Aaron Fox or, you know, they're nothing crazy like that. But they use their handles really well. And I mean, I think they're very similar. I think they're pretty much identical. I think they're identical. I think he is very comparable to Trae Young. And I know a lot of people who Hawk fans don't want to hear that because they like, you know, we want to put Trae Young on this pedestal, which is fine. I get it. I do, too. I want to put him on the pedestal. But I think they're very similar. I don't think really any of them have off-ball abilities. I think they can cut a little bit. But, you know, for the most part, they stand around when they don't have the ball in their hands. I do think because of his height, it gives them assumed scheme versatility. But I don't think he has any. I think he's less of a two guard than even Lonzo is. So I think he's just primarily a point. I mean, his height might be fooling you, but I think he's primarily a point. But I think they're very similar. I think Trae Young and him are very similar. I think maybe just a little bit more potential because of defense. And it's they're both like lateral quickness. Like Trae Young has way better lateral quickness than him, but Trae Young is also not, you know, he doesn't have the length. Like I think LaMelo Ball is longer than Lonzo. I think LaMelo Ball, they said his wingspan is like 6'11", 6'7". I mean, he's like, they say he's longer than Halliburton. So I mean, on top of that, with 6'7", 6'8" height, and on top of that, he's getting stronger. I'll take my chances with LaMelo being a guy who's a 10 potential offense and a 7 potential defense, which is a whole point defensively higher than what Trae is defensively right now, and probably what Trae is going to be defensively forever. But offensively, Trae is already a 10, and he's only in his second year. So there's a chance Trae can get to like Hall of Fame level offense. Can LaMelo get there? We don't know. But I think Trae possibly could. But, you know, so much depends on how they build around them, whoever gets them. So, yeah, I'm very high on LaMelo Ball. I completely understand everybody who has him number one overall. It makes a great deal of sense. He's the most sure thing in this draft. Even though he's a boomer bust, he's just, you know, to get a point guard. Those point guards, getting that guy like a Trae Young, like a Ja Morant, like those guys, if you get one of those guys, you're good for life. I mean, just look at all the teams with point guards who are veterans. All those teams win. And, like, right now, Trae Young's in his second year. Ja Morant's in his first year. So these are kids. De'Aaron Fox's third year. These are kids right now. But wait till they get a little bit older, they're going to be winning a lot of games in this league, a lot. And so it's really good to get one. When you get one, you hold on to them, you cherish them. So I think those are they're all tier 3.5 guys. How do they compare to last year's tier 3.5, which was Cam Reddish, Brandon Hunter, Brandon Clark, who I was exceptionally high on, and I still am. I think his potential is very high at 3. I think he still has a lot to show. What's the kid? Cody White, Garland, and obviously Bobo. Injuries hurt him. But of those three or those four guys who, you know, really I mentioned, you know, Garland showed a lot of talent, and I think that he really has a chance to be, you know, you could see something. He might be something, especially when, you know, things come together. He could be something. Cody White, I mean, he's looking like he's going to be the second coming of Gilbert Arenas. So I feel really good about him. Obviously, I feel really good about Cam Reddish. I've said that in the last podcast. And I feel really good about Brandon Hunt Clark. And I've been a guy that's really high on him. I say he's a system guy. He went to the perfect system for him, a Coach Bud-based system. So I'm really high on him. So, yep. And so now to our last 3.5 guy, tier 3.5 guy, which is Obi Toppin, who's probably my favorite prospect in this draft by a mile. I don't think it's close. He's my favorite prospect. I don't have no one close to him, not even within inches. I mean, he's a 7.5, which is tied for the second highest and third. Was tied for the highest in his class as far as overall with Halliburton and Killian Hayes. He's a 8.5 on offense, which is tied all time with Steph Curry, Blake Griffin, Buddy Hield. If I rated Brandon Roy, I would have rated Brandon Roy as 8.5 out of college. I think I said Blake Griffin. I might be missing one or two guys, but very few people have gotten 8.5. 8.5 is insanely hard to get. There's usually so much. There's a level. The level of proficiency you have to be an 8.5 is insane. You have to have such a high level of proficiency offensively. Like you must be. Your efficiency must be off the charts. Number one. Like you are all the time off the charts level proficiency. When I watch the tape, I'm watching you without the ball. You make an impact. With the ball, you make an impact. I gotta see so much to give you 8.5. I mean, because to me, that is the ultimate, that's the gold standard. 8.5 is the gold standard for a college basketball player on offense. And, you know, obviously most guys don't get it because they don't stay long enough once they are NBA level. But for him, he's a 8.5. And, I mean, he's an older player, 22 years old. Late bloomer. His senior year, he was 6'3". His junior, he was 6'3", 170. So, I mean, he's just a kid that just, he's been growing every year. I mean, he's grew every year. I mean, so that's the big advantage of getting this kid is he really hasn't reached his potential yet in terms of, like, his peak. I mean, the obvious advantages of him I consider it, he's a elite modern power forward in every sense of fashion. He has a great shooting touch, which is what you need. I mean, obviously, you would love to see him shoot the ball a little bit more, you know, with a better form. I mean, his form is more like a LaMarcus Aldridge type of form, which is good. I mean, Al Horford, LaMarcus Aldridge, I mean, those are good forms, but those are forms that usually, generally speaking, you generally have to be kind of open to take those shots. LaMarcus has mastered not being open and making those shots. But LaMarcus is just, he's just unparalleled. I've never seen them like a LaMarcus Aldridge. But, with Obi Toppin, you're talking about a great elite athlete in terms of run, jump, up, down athlete, very flexible in the air, very coordinated in the air, exceptional strength in the air, the ability to finish over with contact, the ability to finish either left or right, exceptional finisher, one of the greatest finishers in NCAA history, only two, three people in the NCAA in the last 20 years have even finished anywhere near him, and that's Brandon Clark and Zion Williamson, which obviously rarely they were drafted last year. You're just talking about a phenomenal movement player. He's not going to be John Collins or Anthony Davis in terms of like speed and agility, but he's probably like a tier two tiers below, on the same level with like a Al Horford and Amar'e Stoudemire in terms of that, but just an exception, just very offensive scheme versatile. He can run every type of set. His passing and vision is probably one of his best gifts. He's such a phenomenal passer. He has such vision. He can pass out of a double team, pass in the post. Great decision maker. Great one-off passer. Great quick decision maker passer. Great dribble handoff passer. Great on top of the perimeter passer. Great at reading flares. Great at reading cuts. Great at reading snares. Great. I mean, just every passing skill you want, he has it. For a big man, that's exceptionally rare. I mean, you're talking about the best of the best centers. Only pop big men have it, like Jokic and Weber and guys like that. And you're just talking about the rare of the rare. And then on top of that, the way he can make the decision is just tremendous. You're then talking about someone with ridiculous touch around the rim. He's even though we're not necessarily expecting his post game to translate, because he doesn't have necessarily the best moves. Even though he has decent footwork, he doesn't have like necessarily a move set. What I do like is he does have great explosiveness. So his explosiveness is, like I said, he can play with strength. He's not a finesse explosive kind of guy where he needs space to be explosive. He's one of those guys that can be explosive with or without space, and so that's a good thing. So that means when he posts up, he can kind of go into the body, be explosive, finish there, and that's a positive in terms of being able to play in the post, because if you can't do that, it's going to be really hard for you to post up guys who are bigger, as big as you are bigger, and you really have to be able to post up guys who are as big as you are bigger in this league. So you must have explosiveness as a post player. He has a exceptionally quick first step. I've seen him beat Abaji with Kansas off the dribble. Just shattered him, just straight shattered him off the dribble. In fact, he drew three defenders. Now, obviously, he didn't finish. I think the ball got stripped or something like that by one of the bigs, or I think three people came. But it was just watching, just seeing how quick he is. And I've seen it multiple times at Baylor, him just taking people, not Baylor, but Dayton, just taking people off the dribble. And I just, every single time I've been wowed, I've been floored by it, because that first step, he really doesn't use it much at Dayton because Dayton runs their system to a T. And it's very similar to kind of watching that Al Horford, Joakim Noah, Florida squad years ago, the way they play. I mean, and of course, it makes sense. Anthony Grant coached him, and he's a disciple of Billy Donovan, so it makes a great deal of sense. But just kind of watching him run that system and watching him kind of used in that way, you've seen how versatile, scheme versatile offensively those guys were, each of them, Noah and Horford. And both, all of them were great passers, and they're not as good as passing. They're not as good as passing as this guy is. He's a better passer than them. So he's just offensively a juggernaut. He's already 8.5. I think just with experience, he'll be at 9.5. On top of that, you got like a situation where he comes into a situation like Atlanta or a place where he have great point guard, and he can be that can give him a 0.5. He'd be a 10 fit offensively, which would put him in an impact rate with even Trey, which is crazy. I mean, there's just not that many players who is producing on that kind of level. And then of course his measures are off the charts. His synergy is insane in terms of offense. And So your reason is, okay, if that guy's so good offensively, why is he not the number one overall pick? I mean, to me, that's just the number one overall pick. And my argument is simple. It's there's people who don't know if he's that good. There's people who think there's obviously a lot of people who do think he's that good. I've talked to them, some of them. But there's people who don't know if he's that good. And the biggest argument is defense. And defense is critical in today's NBA, especially for big men. And he's a player that has a lot of defensive questions. Just as one guy put it, he has as many defensive questions as he has lack of questions for offense. So he's like the opposite. He's great on one end, bad on the other end. And a lot of people are more scared of that because, you know, it's just the tools aren't there, the body's not there. It's just scary. Because, you know, today's bigs who have won are two-way bigs. They're Siakam, and they're guys like that. And even a guy like Jonathan Isaac, who's pretty much, you know, but that's the thing. That's the fear is like, okay, is Jonathan Isaac, a guy who's below average offensively, elite defensively, is that as valuable as someone who's elite offensively, below average offensively? Below average defensively, is the value the same considering the power forward position is such a position where you need to be scheme versatile defensively? And my argument to this is I don't know. I have no clue. But I do know one thing. He does have some good team metrics in terms of his defense. I mean, overall, I've compared it to there's players like Kelly Olynyk, players like Dwight Powell. And these players are not guys who we know as bad defenders in the NBA. And the reason for that is he does have great instincts and defensive instincts. And he does have quick hands. And he has shown the ability to get steals as a big man on the perimeter. Most of us have been on the perimeter. He has good instincts. He's comfortable defending on the perimeter. Now, it's more like Kevin Huerter where he can't really defend people when they have the ball in their hands on the perimeter. And that's a problem. But that being said, I mean, it's not great. I mean, he's gotten bullied by people in the post. The NBA doesn't expect to be much different. You think he's probably gonna get bullied in the post in the NBA. While he does show some ability to block shots, the fear is that he kind of gets jumpy and he doesn't necessarily have the highest basketball IQ in terms of defensively. He doesn't necessarily have the highest feel for the game defensively. He gets lost. Especially off the ball when he's drawn off the ball. He's like for all the things he does offensively, he just does a lot of things negative defensively. And it's just, you know, obviously if he played maybe against some better offensive competition, they'll be able to expose it a little bit more than they have in the A-10. Now, the A-10 defensively has been pretty good. It's pretty much as good as you're going to get nationally, nationwide. I mean, they're all pretty good in that regard. They got guys who can defend, but, you know, as one person said, the A-10, what the A-10 lacks is, you know, players who are modern, because the modern players are going to the bigger schools. They're not going to the A-10. They're going to places where they can get the NBA scene. So they might have talent, but they might be more limited in some ways. And I think he probably kind of basically didn't have to get exposed in that way. And I think that kind of helped him a little bit defensively, but in the NBA, that's not going to be the case. And so there's just a lot of question marks. He's projected to be a really bad defender at the four. He's projected to be a really bad defender at the five. And he shows a lack of position versatility. He shows a lack of defensive scheme versatility defensively. He doesn't really work well in drop coverages. He doesn't really work well in pick and roll coverages. Doesn't really work well in switch. I mean, it's really tough. I mean, I guess the argument would be, some people say, well, is it like Marquise Chris or somebody that is he a five? But my argument, I guess, against that is, you know, with Marquise Chris being a five, but being a four, I mean, being used as a five, is it kind of works when you're playing this, you know, Draymond Green, you know, gives you a lot more chances. But I don't necessarily know if he even works for Obi Toppin, because he's not, even though he's a great athlete, even though he's a pogo athlete, he's not like a pogo stick guy. He's more like a fluid athlete, like a Dwayne Wade, a fluid kind of guy. And so it's different. It's going to be interesting to see how it works, in my opinion, whoever gets him. But like I said, he's my favorite prospect overall. I think if there's a player in this draft that, you know, who can be a superstar, who can be someone, I think in the next 5 to 10 years, we're like talking about like a superstar is him. Now, obviously, I think some other fears I have for him is, you know, he's a dunker. He's a freak athlete. And he just started dunking at 18. So thank God he wasn't like Blake Griffin and what's the other kid? Amari, where they were dunking like at 13, 12, 13. And, you know, obviously, it really hit their knee, impacted their knees heavy by the time they got to 24, 23, 24, 25. Their knees were highly impacted. In fact, both of them had multiple surgeries. One had mitral factor, the other one had towards ACL. Like, you know, it's just they had major injuries, knee injuries, because of the athleticism, the exertion they put on their knees. And I wonder, that's going to be something to take into account about this guy. Is he going to have that major knee injury because he is such a athletic player? But my argument is the way he's been coached. He hasn't been coached to use athleticism. He's been coached to use his brain first. And that's a good thing. He has been coached from Florida to use his brain. He hasn't been coached to use his athleticism. But the NBA is a different monster. And once coaches figure out that, hey, this guy can score a lot of points based on, you know, isolations and based on, you know, just taking people off the dribble, and they don't tell me there's a good decision maker off the double team, they're going to use them a lot more. I mean, especially a team like a Detroit or a Cleveland, they're going to use them a lot more because, you know, that guy's a great point per possession guy. He's going to give you a lot of points per possession. He's going to give you points per touch. He's going to give you a lot of points. He's going to give you a lot of value. He's going to really help your PPP in terms of overall and your team and the individual stats. And, you know, those are the guys who tend to be the best offensive players, right? And so, I mean, that's what Trey is for us. And so I just think that because of that, I can really see, you know, I can see him, you know, just being that player who can become that star. And if there's anybody, like I said, in this draft who could become that, I think it's him. I think him and Haliburton are like the guys who in this draft, to me, are guys who can kind of just change the draft. Like, you know, I just don't know. Like Haliburton is so many things that it has to work for Haliburton. And it's just so many things that has to work for Obi. And I just don't know if that's going to happen. But if they do, they could be, watch out. Okay. And so my next guy on the list is going to be, let's see. Okay, this is actually tier four. So I have a number of guys. I'm not going to spend as much time with these guys, though, obviously. Let me see. All right. So I'm just going to kind of cover these guys shortly. Obviously, they're guys I enjoy a lot. Okay, we're going to start with Killian Hayes. Killian Hayes, what I love about Killian Hayes is him and Haliburton, both to me, are 7.5 floors. Haliburton actually jumped up a little bit recently. I kind of moved them up to a 7.5 floor. I mean, his just tape was sensational. But Killian Hayes, what you like about him is very polished. Very, very polished. skillful player, although not superly, although not overly skilled, just a very skilled, just a very skilled player. The ability to hit step backs, uses strength well, good at pick and roll running. Just a smooth, natural, just a smooth athlete. Not necessarily a good athlete, but a smooth athlete. Not obviously not fast. The comparison with him is just like, you know, a better passing D'Angelo Russell, or D'Angelo Russell with like a better defense. And my argument against D'Angelo Russell, period, is that D'Angelo Russell was so skilled out of Monterey, and he was so skilled at Ohio State. And I don't know if I've seen that level of skill from the Hick Hayes. Yes, he has that step back in his bag. I understand the step back looks really good. Looks beautiful. Probably him and Anthony Harris probably have the two best step backs in this draft. But and I understand he has good size. He's 205. But I just don't, I don't like the whole comparison, because Russell really learned the American game in terms of skill level, how to use his skill, because he didn't have that athleticism. So I just think that watching Russell, I just saw a lot more skill. But that being said, I do think that I've heard people who worked with Russell say that, oh, no, he's like Russell. But I just think Russell's skill level is just higher as a prospect. But that being said, I mean, it's just really hard for me to buy into, like, to what he is. Which is kind of like, I don't necessarily know if he's a scorer Russell is either. Like, Russell is just was just a natural scorer. And I think Hayes is a solid scorer. And I think maybe people are hoping that he becomes like Kevin, like, you know, like Dennis Schroeder, where he just, the natural ability just come together and he just scores because he just has the ability to. But I mean, Dennis Schroeder never been a 20 point game scorer in this league. So it's just, I think he's like, at most he was like 19.7 or something like that. I mean, that's close, but it's still not that, especially considering he's the one option that year. So I'm just not as high on him. I don't see D'Angelo Russell. D'Angelo Russell, I saw 20 points per game being very feasible. And for Hayes, I don't necessarily know if it's feasible. But that being said, I do think he's a better player than Russell. I do think he's a better player. I think he's just more polished overall. I think there's just a lot more parts of the game that he gets that Russell just didn't have coming into the NBA. And I mean, I think that's all because of his background, how he came into the NBA. So as far as I'm concerned, I have him as a 7.5 current, 8 potential, which is pretty much similar to DeAndre Hunter. But I'm very high on his floor, and I think he's going to be someone that, you know, people, I mean, could he have some like really untapped potential? Absolutely. But I don't necessarily see it. But I mean, you never know. We'll see. Next is Onyeka Okongwu. Now, what I like about Okongwu is pretty much he has a high floor, a 7. Probably the best one and done guy in this draft. I don't think it's close. His box per, plus minus, it favored guys like Derek Favors, who were really high draft picks. It was obviously superior to guys like Bam Adebayo. And it just, he really showed so much to me. I just think that he's just a sensational player. I think the fear with him is obvious. Is to me, I think he's going to be a 4 instantly and then become a center down the road. And I think some people have doubt that he is an actual power forward. They don't necessarily know if he can defend the power forward. They think that he doesn't necessarily have the lateral quickness he needs to defend the power forward. And to be honest with you, I kind of can see it a little bit. Even though he's a great athlete, I kind of see what they're saying. Like, he's kind of a tweener. And, you know, with Bam was a tweener, but Bam was different in terms of potential. And I think with Onyeka is, what is he? Yeah, so basically I think that's pretty much what we pretty much stand with him. I think he's a guy with, you know, 8 ceiling. But I do see a lot. I do see potential. And I think I actually love him, actually. I mean, personally to me, I think he's I'm actually a little bit higher on him than most. I like his mobility. I do think eventually I think he's mobile enough to play power forward and defense as well. I like his movement off the ball. I think his movement is really good. I think he's a, obviously he doesn't have the scoring mindset that someone like a, you know, I mean his scoring mind, he doesn't have the scoring mindset, but he's still someone that gets himself some good positions to make good plays. I just think of him more as a power forward. Me personally, but I see center as a long term potential for him. I mean, obviously at 245 already, you know, it just shows potential. But I like him a lot. I'm a big fan of Okongwu, and as a center, he's pretty much my highest rated center on the board. I love him honestly, but I mean, I could see what people don't like about him. I could kind of see it, but. For me, I'm a big fan of Okongwu. I'm a big fan of his size. I'm a big fan of his strength. I'm a big fan of his floor. I'm just a big fan of him in general. I think he's going to be a really good player in this league. I don't honestly think the Bam Adebayo comparisons are true or good at all. I don't think that's favorable to him because Bam Adebayo is just like such a great athlete. And to be honest with you, I don't think Bam Adebayo is going to be this good anyway. I mean, he didn't have the IQ he has now. He didn't have the he was always a step too slow getting to plays and everything. I mean, like we have guys like that, and they stayed a step too slow on the plays. Like this guy really worked his butt off to get to where he is today, and I think it's a testament to Bam Adebayo's you know work. But I mean, I'm not one of those guys that's going to just. Look past that, okay? So for me, it's just I think they're different, but I'm high on Okongwu. Next is Haliburton on my list. I don't think like so. These are guys who are rated fourth overall in my opinion, and they're tied for fourth. But what I liked about Haliburton is he has a very high floor. I moved it up recently, but Sam's ceiling as Killian. I think he's an 8 ceiling. He kind of fits the mold of Lonzo Ball in a sense, although he's not Lonzo Ball. He's nowhere near as good as Lonzo Ball. But he's also maybe better. Because I think with Tyrese, he everything he does is to pick and roll. And I think that's the problem is we've seen players like him before who can't really beat you off the pick, who can't really beat you outside of pick and roll. Guys like Trey Burke. And they really never amount to much because you really have to beat people with your dribble. If you don't have the first step, you got to beat people into trouble. And that's a fear factor I have with Haliburton is he doesn't really beat people off with his dribble. And his first step isn't like, you know, lightning or anything like that. So it's just his first step doesn't really beat people. And then on top of that, his ball handling doesn't beat people. So it's like, okay, you're basically beating people with pick and rolls. And, you know, Trey Burke already proved that that's hard to do in this league. Like, people just play under and they say, beat us and can you beat me? And I do like about Haliburton is he's a great stand-up shooter. So I do think he'll force you to play over the top to some degree. And with his passing being what it is and with his height being 6'6", 6'7", I think Haliburton gives you a interesting dynamic in a sense. And he's the smartest player in this draft, actually. Highest basketball IQ with him and Cassius Winston are both geniuses. But you know, Cassius don't have that kind of passing ability. So it's one thing to be a genius, but you got to be a genius who can pass to really be effective in the NBA. And I mean, Haliburton also has the ability to score. Like I think that's the one thing that people like about Haliburton is like Haliburton even though he's not a dribble pull up specialist, he just doesn't play like a modern game. But even though he's not a dribble pull up specialist, he could do so much. I mean, he can really rebound. He can really get steals. He can get blocks. He can get a lot of stocks. He's such an anomaly, and anomalies have worked in the NBA. I mean, Draymond Green's an anomaly. He was a college anomaly with Draymond Green. Steph Curry's a college anomaly. College anomalies have worked in the NBA. Now they don't work everywhere, but they have worked. And so I guess the worry about, I think the thing is with a guy like Haliburton who can do so much, who has off ball skills as well, who has the B-ball IQ that's exceptional, who has the ability and skill that you need to be an NBA star. The question is, does he have the prereqs? Does he have the beat somebody off the first step? Does he have that, or is that a big enough deal? Or is he on a team where they can kind of like take that away and take away the need for him to be so good at that? If he's on a team that can take away the need for him to be so good at that, maybe he can reach a level of potential that we don't. He might not be able to reach with our teams. Like, we all see that with Draymond. When Draymond is with Golden State, he's able to reach a level that no one else can reach. Like, he can reach a level where he's more impactful in the playoffs for the Warriors than Kevin Durant. In fact, more impactful. Only person more powerful for the Warriors is Steph, and even some ways statistically, it, you know, advanced metrics would say it's still Draymond. So like, there's certain situations that can make a player, like, it can hide his weaknesses, and like, maybe that's what he kind of needs. So a bad team is just not a good situation for Haliburton, but maybe going to a great team is a great situation for Haliburton. Because he's such an anomaly. He's a statistical anomaly. He's so good at so many things. He's so smart. The way he sees the game. I mean, he's just a statistical anomaly. And he's so skilled in that. He has so much ability. And if you saw him in the USA games, he was a tier above everybody else. Like, he played with Kate Cunningham, was still the best player. And like, Kate Cunningham probably be the one picking this draft. So I just think that, in my opinion, Haliburton needs to be considered strongly for, you know, he has to be considered strongly for being maybe for a player who can probably have that potential. I mean, like I said, if there's two players who have that potential to be superstars in this draft, I don't necessarily know if Ball's one of them. I think Ball has the potential to be a star. I know for a fact he can be a star. I know for a fact he can be like Trae Young star. But like, and same for Edwards. But if you're actually talking about like superstars, like guys who, you know, can get to superstar level, I think you're probably looking at Toppin and Haliburton as the two most likely guys, because they just what they can do, I think it's just maybe a little bit more than what others can do. But at the same time, both of them can easily not get there. Very easily. All right. Next on my list is Denny. I always struggle with saying his name. But I just call him Denny. Denny A. Yeah, but Denny, I think what I love about Denny is he's a pass, dribble, shoot guy. Although the shooting is questionable. Very questionable. But, I mean, I've seen him shoot an open gym. He can really shoot three open-wise. I mean, I kind of compare his shooting to Nick Anderson, I think. I think he's going to always be a poor free throw shooter, but be probably a decent three-point shooter. Has good size. Really good passer. I've talked to guys, and the guy that keeps coming up in most people's, like, scout is like Danilo Gallinari, and I kind of agree with that. I see a lot of Danilo in his game. Maybe a little bit more athletic than Danilo at an early age, can guard probably the perimeter, can guard the threes a little bit better than Danilo could. But and maybe probably not the obviously not the free throw shooter Danilo was, but just a better defender than Danilo. And so I mean, if you're one of those guys who are looking for a three, and probably looking for the best three in this draft, I think maybe Denny might be that guy. Because, you know, to me, it's either him or Okoro. And, you know, I'm probably a lot higher on Denny's shooting translating than Okoro's shooting. Just because Denny's been pretty much a consistent 33% three-point shooter for, you know, most of the leagues he played for. While Okoro's been pretty either non-existent or this is as good as it gets. And, you know, I mean, that being said, he can maybe reach a level of shooting three-pointers where it could become good one day. But, you know, you're going to the NBA level now. And with that level of offense, it's really tough. And Denny's a seven already. So you're talking about a seven. You're talking about a seven on offense. I mean, a seven overall. And, you know, that's just really hard to turn down, I mean. You know, because you're gonna be a productive player, and like, teams need productive players. Teams need players who can just come in and they can plug in and he can play effective minutes. And I feel Denny is strongly one of them. So definitely Denny's high up on my list. And just for record, last year DeAndre Hunter was a tier 4 player. So even though DeAndre Hunter went fourth, He was a tier four player in my scout last year. And even in, you know, obviously you can hear why. I mean, I didn't think his potential was all that high. And I did understand why he went high because of his positional scheme versatility and, you know, just the fact he could be a three and do that and guard big wings. Is, you know, that's something that's rare and hard to find. Okay, but next on my list now, and we're going to stop with the next. I think we're going to stop in the next four. I think we're going to do four more because I think I'm running out of time. Yeah, I'm running out of time, so we're going to do four more. Next is James Wiseman. James Wiseman is someone I'm not very high on, but I am very high on his potential. He's a 5.5 overall player right now with a 5.5 offensive floor and a 5.5 defensive floor. I've compared him as a prospect to one of what's his kid name? Robinson from New York, Mitchell Robinson. Although I do think higher Wiseman as a prospect than Mitchell Robinson, I do think that like both of those players are like guys who talent wise are way better than they are actually impact wise. And even if their metrics, if his metrics look good, they're not really like helping win games. If you watch them play, they're not helping win games. They don't read and react well. They're further away than they are ready to help you play. In fact, we're in year two of Mitchell Robinson. He still doesn't start for the Knicks. The Knicks are bad. And they don't even have anyone in center position. They don't start him. So if, you know, it just goes to tell you that Mitchell Robinson is just not close to what they think he should be. And so I think that's just going to be the case for, I think Wiseman is a little bit further along than him. I mean, but for me, he has such a low floor. But obviously the ceiling is ridiculous. He's tied for first with the highest ceiling in the class with a 9. His offensive ceiling and defensive ceiling are equally as good. I mean, we're talking about a kid with a 8.5 offensive ceiling to me and a defensive ceiling of 9.5. So, I mean, you're talking about – when you talk about James Wiseman, you're talking about somebody who could be really good on both ends of the floor. Somebody who, you know, who can just be special. And to some degree, I even think – actually, I'm wrong. I just had his potential offensively and defense as a 9 each. But just having something like that potentially is just tremendous. And it's just so hard to find at the center position. And people like him are hard to find. People who can run like him, athletic like him, have that measurement that he has, the length, the hands. It's just so hard to find a guy like James Wiseman. And, you know, a lot of teams can just use that because that modern fit and the lateral quickness that he naturally has, he has so much in his toolkit, and it's just very easy to develop. And a lot of people would just rather develop these things because they're just hard to find. And, you know, for him, mindset matters, but the talent's there. And as long as the talent's there, that's all some people care about. Next is Isaac Okoro. He's someone what I consider a low floor and a high ceiling. Not necessarily a very high ceiling, but just a high ceiling. So basically, I have his floor listed as a 5.5, and I have his ceiling as an 8. I think I have his floor as a 6 and his ceiling as an 8. And his offensive floor is a 5.5, and his defensive floor is a... his offensive floor, as I said, is 5. His defensive floor is 8.5, which pretty much puts him close to Cam Reddish as a rookie, as a first half of rookie season. And his defense is just exceptional. He's further advanced than Cam was, even as a prospect. He does so many things well on defense, whether it's hedging or whether it's covering ground on defense or whether it's playing help side, whatever, it's man-to-man defense. He just does so much well. It's pick-and-roll defense. He just does so much well on it. And he's just such an exceptional defender. He's a rare 8.5 defensive prospect in terms of, you know, those guys fresh out of college who can really play. And obviously, as a one-on-done being that, that's exceptionally rare. But it's not ridiculous. I mean, defense, being that great on defense, a perimeter defender, you know, it's just those some players are just that good. And Okoro's one of them out of college, but that doesn't necessarily mean that he's just, you know, he's going to be the greatest defender in the world. It doesn't mean that. But it just means that as of right now, he's already a phenomenal defender. The big thing about him is he's very much like Jackson Hayes. Like last year, Jackson Hayes was very similar in a sense where he had a very low floor, but he had a ridiculously high ceiling. He had a ridiculously high ceiling to some people's view in terms of what he could be. And I think they're very similar in a sense where I think in his prime he could become much better than even an 8. He could probably be like, he could be somewhere like a 9 or something like that. So I think when you're talking about Isaac Okoro, you're talking about somebody that's going to be a really good player down the road. I'm a big fan of him. And I think he's somebody that you should look into drafting quite high. All right, and the last person I'm going to talk about now is going to be Cole Anthony. I have him as a mid, low mid floor, which is 6.5. And I have him as a semi high, as an 8. I think I have him as an 8.5 ceiling. And I actually think Cole Anthony is better right now than LaMelo Ball. I just think he's probably the best. I think he's the best, like, one-and-done point guard in this draft right now. Like, I think he's the best one-and-done point guard in this draft. You're talking about he has a dribble pull-up game. He can shoot the range. He can score all three levels. His finishing, I know his finishing wasn't good this year, but I do think, like, Trae Young is better than, it's going to be better in the NBA than it was in college. I do think athleticism, he had some injuries he's playing with, and I think it hurt him this year a little bit too much. And I think with all the time off, you're going to see kind of him make a jump in the next year that you probably saw from Cam Reddish. But I don't think it's going to be a second half jump. I think he's going to just come in and do that because of the length that he has to recover from his injuries. And I think you're going to see a much better Cole Anthony. He's a phenomenal pick and roll passer. Even though his stats didn't read like he was a good passer, the team was bad. It wasn't finishing key things. They weren't making good reads. He had no real good players around him, even guys at the NBA level. And even basketball, you know, Bacot has like NBA level potential. He's still far away, and I think he's like a 3 to 4 year prospect anyway. So it just Cole Anthony just didn't have a great deal to work with, and I think he's just a much better player than people think. Although, as far as ceiling's concerned, I don't necessarily think he's going to be like this great point guard. I think you're talking about someone like who's going to reach Baron Davis or Shai Gilgeous Alexander level potential. Maybe a 1 or 2 time All-Star. A guy who obviously can help you win games. A poor point guard. But I do think he's a very good player. I think, like I said, I think he's better than, I personally think he's better than Trey as a freshman, and I think he's better than LaMelo. And the reason why I think he's better is just simply because he's able to do things that translate a lot more. He has the strength. Like Cole Anthony has that. He's like 195, 200, probably like 205 maybe now, and he just has that strength where he can come in day one in the NBA and play in the NBA. Like he's just, his game is going to translate well to the NBA. The way he plays translates well to the NBA. I think the question with him is, like, does he have that potential? Because I don't think he's the playmaker that neither one. I don't think he's the playmaker that, you know, those guys were. Those guys are such great playmakers, and they add such playmaking value to their team. And it really helps points per possession in this modern game. And I don't necessarily know if Cole has that, but Cole is a great pick and roll player. And I think you're going to see a lot more of that in the NBA. You're just going to see a much better Cole Anthony. I think you're going to see his explosiveness back that he had last year, that he had as a high schooler. You're going to see it back now. And I think that's going to really help him. He's going to be beating people off the dribble like with no problem. His first step was exceptional as a college in high school. And in college, it just clearly seemed like he just had injuries he's playing through because he didn't seem like the same athlete. And it definitely hurt him a little bit. But I mean, you're talking about a great athlete. Cole Anthony's a phenomenal athlete, and you're gonna see to me a player that is well worth drafting in the top 10 picks, you know, to me. But that's pretty much it. After that, I had like Trey Jones and Kyra Lewis. Other guys, I'm very high on. Although I do think Trey is more of a long term play, and Kyra is more of a play that, you know, they're both long term plays. But I'm big on both of those guys. They were next on the list, but there's just so many guys to go, and they're all tier four. But yeah, for the most part, this is going to be a good draft. My top five for the Atlanta Hawks are Anthony Edwards, Obi Toppin, Okoro, Okongwu, and Denny. As I know the top five, as I've heard recently, they have Edwards, Okoro, Toppin, Haliburton, and Wiseman. I'm not quite so high on that, but you know, that's just what I've heard so far. Obviously, there hasn't been any workouts. Workouts have not been approved because of COVID-19. I hope everyone's being safe because of COVID-19. It's pretty dangerous out there. You know, please make sure you wear a mask. COVID-19 is a very dangerous virus. It all just take it very serious, and you know, make sure you protect yourself. But beyond that, just want to say this is going to be a good draft. I think we're going to come away with a good player. Are we going to come away with an exceptionally great player? I'm not sure. But like I said, if I had my way, I would go Edwards number one if I'm on the Hawks to be bored, because even if I have to trade him eventually, a player like him is easy to trade and get value for. And I might be able to get somebody for him that can get us over the edge. After that, Toppin. While I have very serious doubts with Toppin and Trae Young's defense, that offense, the ability to add him on offense and to get the touches that we get, because I think if we just go straight to touches, this is going to be pretty interesting as well. But if we go by just touches and the Atlanta Hawks, over the season, John Collins has gotten 71.4 touches. And when we had Jabari Parker, I guess Parker didn't play that many minutes. Or they took him off the Hawks. Let's see. I'm going to go to the Kings. Okay. Give me a second, guys. Okay, I have to go to Atlanta because they took Parker barely played. Oh, no wonder why I said last 10 games. Sorry about that. All right. Jabari Parker got 26.2 touches. So that's a pretty big touch number for, you know, someone who only played 15 minutes per game. So, yes, Atlanta is a very touch-friendly system. So just getting someone like Obi Toppin into that system would just do tremendous wonders as far as play per possession. And, you know, the one thing about Atlanta is we are pretty bad in these categories. I think our play per possession is like 24th. I mean, as bad as a defensive team we are, our offensive team should be 1,000 times better. But our offensive team is way worse. Our offense is as bad as our defense in some ways. And truth be told, we're very limited in terms of who can score on our team outside of Trae Young. After that, I think the next person on my list was Okoro. I think Okoro. And Okoro, for the most part, is just a really bad offensive player. 5.5, I think I have listed right here. And then a 6. I think he's really a 5 offensively. He should be a 5. But, yeah, Okoro's 5 offense, 8.5 defense. You're talking about 6.5 player. I just think that he's just not going to help you as much this year, as much as Atlanta probably would try to sell that they would. But I do think that by probably the end of the year, he'll be a big help to us in terms of, like, just, you know, just executing. Kind of reminds you a little bit with what we were getting out of, obviously not Sam Player, but kind of what we were getting out of, Torian Prince, his first year in Atlanta. So I think Okoro would make sense to some degree if we drafted him. But he's more of a long-term play, obviously. Other than that, then you have guys like Denny and Okongwu. And those are guys I'm just very high on. Denny, he kind of fits everything we do. And I like him a lot. And then Okongwu is just, you know, just the height, the size, the athleticism, the versatility on both ends of the floor, the high floor for a true freshman, one and done. I just think that he just brings so much to the table that you just can't really look past. And I'm a big fan of that. And I think that, you know, those are probably my top 5 guys for the Atlanta Hawks, are those 5 guys in my opinion. But that's pretty much it for right now, guys. We went over an hour. I'm going to end this podcast right now. I'm going to probably post this Monday morning. And it was great talking with you guys. I hope you guys have a great night. And let's go Hawks. Take care.